This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You might assume we're both good at presenting to a live audience because of this podcast. But at the end of the day, when we record, it really feels like we're just talking to one another. Presenting information in person in a formal setting to a large audience is something that still makes us really nervous. To prepare for a live speaking event we're hosting together, we turned to our masterclass subscription to not only refine our presentation skills, but to build our confidence in a different kind of public speaking capacity. Between Robin Roberts, Hillary Clinton, and Kevin Hart's expertise, our confidence skyrocketed. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master negotiate with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or plan your dream wedding with celebrity event planner Mindy Wise, Masterclass has you covered. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, like our latest aha moments from Robin Roberts' Effective and Authentic Communication class that we watched before our event presentation. She taught us how to establish a genuine connection with the audience from the start. I'll always be a little nervous before presenting, but Masterclass prepared us in a way that dialed my nerves down and gave me tools to ground myself. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 50% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Em.
How are you?
So much better now that I see you. And this week is just much better for me.
You are so much better now that you don't have a kidney stone in your body. Tell everyone about your kidney stone.
So I birthed a kidney stone. Also, maybe I should read all of the names that people wrote on my kidney stone. Oh my God, we got such good names for this kidney stone. So I'll just give everyone kind of the lay of the land.
Yes.
Last week, Nikki was away. So Emily and I were covering the business, you know, so we had a lot of stuff to do. Thursday, I wake up, horrible pains. Emily told me it's probably gas pains. So I took a
you're making this like I was, your husband was a nurse. Don't listen to my dumbass. What did he say?
I have to make it about you because we're on this podcast and it's so funny to hear your reaction when I blame it on you. So Emily specifically told me it was gas pains.
Emily was like, don't go to the hospital. It's only gas pains. Get over yourself.
Take some Gas-X. I took a bunch of Gas-X. It did nothing. And, you know, I was just in this like achy pain all day. I would like feel better for a little bit and I would stand up and try to do some work. And then I would be like, oh, have to lay back down. It was terrible. Anyway, so I end up going to the ER. I wait a little bit because my friend works at the Jeff ER and she was on night shift, so I was like VIP in the ER. If you're going to be VIP anywhere, let it be the ER.
Yes.
Right? I feel like in our 20s, we're like, I want to be VIP at the club. In your 30s, you want to be VIP at the ER. Let me tell you, I got right in. got an IV in. They gave me lots of pain meds. Come to find out 6 hours later that I have a kidney stone and that I decided at 2 a.m. that I was going to pass it at home. And so I go home the next morning. I call Em, obviously, because we talk every day.
Yep.
And I was kind of telling her the process. I have to pee into this little strainer to see when the kidney stone comes out. So I show her the strainer. We're FaceTiming. I put her down and I birth the kidney stone while we're on FaceTime. It was such a beautiful moment.
I just need you to know, I just went through our text messages, and the first time I said maybe you should go to the hospital was 8:31 in the morning.
Oh my God, I love that you love
just to defend myself.
Are defending yourself. I'm so sorry. I honestly do not blame you, even in the least. It was honestly me. I did not want to go to the ER and then be like, you have gas veins.
Yeah, why does that feel embarrassing? It's not. Like, you should be able to get medical care no matter what, but like, that does feel embarrassing to go and then be like, you just have gases. I was like that, like when I was literally having a baby like come out of me, I like wouldn't go to the hospital because I like kept being like, they're gonna send me home and tell me I'm not ready. My husband's like, your water broke 12 hours ago. Like what do you mean you're not
you know what it is? It's we as women minimize our own pain just like the medical system minimizes our pain.
Wow, that's what it is, right?
We've internalized that.
I know a man would go to the hospital no matter what. Actually, I don't know if that's true. I think men don't.
Yeah,
probably get enough medical attention.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay, here are some of the names for my kidney stone. Ready? Dwayne Johnson.
The Rock. Edit.
The Rock. Just in case no one knew who Dwayne Johnson was, you know. Someone said Spike Prick. Someone said, I love this one. Someone said Kid Rock. Like, why didn't I think of that? That is so good. What else did someone say? Someone said had a roommate that named hers Calcium and it was Cal for short.
That's nice. That's so cute.
You know, it's also really validating to hear that I'm not the only one naming their kidney stone. You know?
I think everyone should. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Someone said, by someone I mean you, Sally the Stone.
I said that one.
So these are just some beautiful names that you've named my new child. And people have said that, you know, having a kidney stone is worse than childbirth. So
that's insane. That is fucking
insane. That's my
child.
I know.
I mean, if you think how small a vaginal opening is and then you think of how small a urinary tract is.
Holy gajeebers.
Zoinks.
So.
Zoinks, Fred. There was a kidney stone.
Never heard zoinks in my life.
Scooby-Doo?
But once again, I don't have an actual child.
I knew what that was before I had a child. Just
like my kidney stone is not watching Scooby-Doo yet.
Yeah, but never say never. You never know what that stone's going to be into in a few years, okay?
That's true, right? They grow up so quick. I have to get it analyzed. I have to like take it in and get it analyzed to see like what is it.
Someone's gonna be like, I listened to this great podcast about therapy, and then people are gonna hear a story about a fucking dressed up ham and name me a kidney stone, and we don't look like very legitimate therapists anymore.
Listen, you know, we gotta put a little bit of humor into this. Otherwise it would just be, you know, just like a heavy ass podcast.
And this is also why we'll never get hired as professors.
Definitely not. I'm totally fine with that.
Same.
I'm sorry, is that a dream of yours that we're ruining right now? I had no idea. Do you want to be hired? Have you been applying? Behind my back and I didn't know? Like, who knew that was the direction we were going?
I'd love to leave this amazing career to go make $1,000 as an adjunct professor and get treated like shit. Professors are treated like garbage.
It's really a shame.
It's horrible.
It's academic, really...
but it's also very funny that we're sitting here talking about kidney stones and dressing up a honey baked ham.
And so I don't know how to make this transition. Actually, I do know how to make this transition.
If you need therapy after listening to this conversation,
you might need some therapy. From this conversation, I need some therapy for my kidney stone experience. Well, let me say, as I finish out my kidney stone experience, and I think you can attest to this too. I think we have both proven to ourselves this week that we can do literally anything.
Yes.
Like I thought having
my
kidney
confidence
stone,
is sky high.
Safe. I'm like, I can deal with anything. I birthed a kidney stone. I can do literally anything.
Yes. Well, my husband was traveling. Nikki was away. You were in the hospital. I had a sick kid and I handled everything with the business. And it brings back to this thing we've talked about before is that self-esteem comes from mastery. The ways we feel good about ourselves is actually about challenging ourselves and doing something hard and feeling good about it, even if it wasn't perfect. And I think we both had that experience last week of like, hey, we did something really, really hard and we can handle shit.
Something that we never we didn't think we would be able to do, you know, like I didn't think I'd be able to get through that pain. And I did. You didn't think you'd be able to run the business on your own while everyone's out of commission. And you did, you know, so it's just, I love to pinpoint these examples for the future because shit always comes up, right? It's just, it's going to come up. And so to just say, well, I got through that. I can get through whatever comes my way in the future, just to hold on to that. And, you know, I'm probably going to bring this into my therapist appointment. And today we are going to be answering all of your questions about therapy, questions about starting therapy, finding a new therapist, breaking up with a therapist, and therapist horror stories, which, you know, are horrific to hear, but, you know,
they're real.
They're real, and we'll get through them. But we had an intro that we didn't even do.
Oh my gosh, from Lauren. Lauren, a listener, wonderful listener, Lauren wrote in and said, what's the best and worst vacation you ever took? Best was Thailand.
My best was Thailand too,
yeah,
yes.
We both went to Thailand. Not together.
Not together, separately.
But even better if we were together.
We both went on our honeymoons. We both went to the same place on our honeymoons. And I have to say, I copied Emily. It's cheap there. You know,
it's great. It's a good place. You're there for 2 weeks.
It's a wonderful trip.
But worst vacation I ever took. I don't know if I... Okay, actually, I have one.
Go.
A few years ago, this had to be... Oh my God. So probably like 10 years ago now. No. Yeah. Like probably 10 years ago, me and my family took my nephew to Disney World at Christmas time.
Oh my God.
It was fucking horrible.
That's terrible.
It was a horrible, horrible decision. There was so many people there. He was kind of too young, like not super into everything. We were all grouchy and crowded. That, I would say, was probably the worst. But there were still lovely parts of it. Like even the worst vacation is still an amazing vacation.
Yeah. I have to say, Disney World is like my worst nightmare.
That's like your hell. We were just talking about, like, are we going to take Millie soon? And I keep being like,
ooh.
And I want to.
Okay, mine was when I lived in Barcelona, we went to Paris for a weekend. But before that, we had been, you know, we were traveling all over the place. We had been to Switzerland. You know, we were just like bopping around. My roommate at the time tore her ACL skiing.
Ooh.
And so the next weekend we went to Paris. It was like in February. It was freezing. And we were wheeling her around everywhere, which is so sad, you know. And I was so young at the time, so I didn't get to like appreciate anything. So yeah. It just... You know, I
you're saying about all the shit you couldn't do.
Exactly.
You weren't so able to be.
I don't want
to
complain about like being in Paris. It was gorgeous, but it was just cold. You just want to do all these things that you can't do. But
yeah,
she's better.
That really sucks. She tore ACL.
Yeah, skiing.
And was she out for like half of your...
Oh yeah, we wheeled her around the rest of abroad. So we were either wheeling her around or she was on crutches. I know, it was so sad.
Oh, that was not the way she thought her abroad experience was going to go.
No,
huh?
No.
And but sometimes when experience doesn't go the way you think it's going to go, that's when you go talk to a therapist. So
there
let's
it
talk
is. Then
today
we're back.
About
and
all
we're
the things back. About being a therapist.
Anyone else feeling like the mental load of making dinner, the planning, the shopping, the prep, figuring out the timing? It's a little heavy to carry, huh? Same. That's why I am so grateful for Hungry Root. The food quality, simple recipes, true tastiness, and delivery right to my door is truly a game changer. When getting started, you take a fun, short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know you, what you like to eat, and more. Then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations to put those groceries to use, so you can sit back, relax, and offload the many steps of meal planning. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, healthy snacks, smoothies, sweets, ready meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins, supplements, much more. My favorite item from my latest box was the honey citrus chopped salad, lemon pepper chicken, and the four cheese tortellini. You gotta try it for yourself. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's gotta taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
I am thrilled that the weather is finally warming up here in Philly. I went to switch out my closet the other day from my fall winter wear to my spring summer wear and noticed that I very much needed a refresh. So thank goodness for Quince that allows me to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Now I have a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I refresh my closet with the high-waisted linen shorts that come in multiple colors and patterns, the comfiest cotton tees, and my latest favorite, the smocked mini dress. And don't miss out on their accessories. Quince has the coolest sunglasses and 14 karat gold jewelry to complete any look. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
We have answered this question before, but we will both answer it again. Somebody wrote in, for all of our new listeners, how'd you guys become a therapist? And the reality was, Jen and I both had really shitty experiences as clients, and were also already the person their friends already kind of went to. And I think that there is something, and I think we could also talk about some of the horror stories, therapy horror stories. But when you have a negative experience in therapy, I think sometimes you react a few different ways. One of those is that, like, you're like, I'm never doing this again. I'm never going back to therapy. Therapy is bullshit. Another one's like, I gotta never go to this person again. I'm gonna talk about to everyone. Or you be Jen and I, and you're like, fuck this. This was so bad. I could do this shit better and I'll become one. And that's basically what we did.
Yeah. I had a therapist in college who I was in a really bad relationship and, like, went in to talk about it. And she was much older than me. And the only thing she was focusing on was my drinking. I was like, dude, I'm in college.
Yeah.
You know, like, I understand that, like, what I'm doing definitely is not healthy, but, like, that is not what I'm here for. She was so focused on it.
But I had a similar thing too, where this guy was like, oh, like, this is about your drink. I'm sitting there saying, like, I want to go home and I hate college. And he's like, it's because you're drinking. I'm like, well, that's not really the reason. I hate it when I'm sober too. But it was the deep, deep feeling of not being seen.
Yes.
And the feeling like your therapist has their own agenda.
Yes.
And I think that's
what it was for me. Yeah. It very much felt like the therapist had their agenda or had tunnel vision in a lot of ways, and not being heard or seen was a big part of that.
So can I do these therapist horror stories really
Please.
Fast?
Yeah. I think it's a great idea. It's a great
We can go through these very quickly. But so somebody said, I had a therapist ghost me after our first session. Is this normal? No, it's not.
No.
Your therapist, there's chances your therapist might say to you, is like, hey, like, I don't know if I'm the best fit for you. Right. If you're coming in to talk about, if you're someone who doesn't work at all with addictions, you have someone who's coming in to talk about addictions, it's not the right fit.
Which, so there's, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, but gosh, please tell me.
I was just going to say, like, it is good practice for your therapist to do that. You know, I think
they should.
As a client, especially when you're vulnerable going into a new therapist, to hear that from a new therapist, for them to say, like, I don't know if I'm the right fit for you. Like, I want to set you up with, you know, this person or this person. It can be a very vulnerable, like, rejecting experience too, when you're going in and you're feeling, you know, you're already in that kind of fragile state. But I just want to reiterate that it is good practice that if your therapist doesn't work with what you're bringing in, or they think that someone else could help you more, then it is good practice for you to go in. Maybe you see them once, maybe you see them twice, and for them to say, like, hey, I've really thought about this and I might not be the best fit for you. And I also understand how difficult that can be, you know, financially also, because you've paid for two sessions. And also maybe you've opened up a ton. And so to have a therapist say that to you after you have gone through that process can be really, really hard. But to know in the end that is best practice if your therapist is really thinking about you and they're thinking about your care. What matters is how they go about it. So if they ghost you, that is not normal and that is not good practice.
Yes. Yes. Although what I have heard people say before is sometimes throughout something people also have to remember, especially if you're having a therapist in private practice, therapists are not taught how to run a business. Therapists are taught to help be therapist. So let's say your therapist ends the session with, well, let me know if you want to reschedule, and they put it on you and then you don't hear from them. That's not necessarily ghosting, but it is not their best communication option. And a lot of times when you have a therapist, especially if they're newer into private practice and they're like totally on their own, not in a group practice, sometimes like people don't know how to like the best way to run a business because like it's not taught. Like in grad school, they fucking tell you like go work for an agency, go pay your dues. That's what you're supposed to do. And then a lot of people want to be in private practice because it is financially typically the better option. But it's not taught. So like sometimes there's like this little thing, especially like if you're in a corporate world and you're like, why does this feel so weird? It's like usually because like there could be a badass, best fucking therapist in the world and be a shit, not the best at running a business.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
It happens.
And both things matter, yeah. You know, fortunately and unfortunately. That's something we try to do is like really help our therapists with their communication. Because once again, no one teaches you that in school. They just teach you therapeutic skills, right? And the business part is a huge part of it.
Yeah. Somebody said, my therapist is quick to diagnose people in my life with personality disorders. Is that a red flag? I don't know if I'd call it a red flag, but I think I'm going to say something shitty.
Okay.
I think it's the easy way out. I think it's the easy, non-confrontational way to blame other people.
Mm.
As opposed to being like, so what's your part in this?
Right.
And I think especially if it's like a younger or newer clinician, it's very hard to challenge clients. Right.
Well, I guess the question is what comes after that, right? Like what comes after them diagnosing people? You know, if they're saying like, I can't diagnose this person.
They're not allowed to. They seem to.
I can't diagnose them. I'm, from what you're telling me, I'm noticing X, Y, Z. Let's talk about, you don't have control over what they are doing. Let's talk about what you do have control over. Mm-hmm. And that is your part in this or how you respond to this, right? So if it just stops there, where it's just like, I'm diagnosing all these people in your life and then we're done, then that's one thing. What comes after that? You know, how does it play out after that in session? What does that look like?
And just so everyone knows, ethically, we are not allowed to diagnose anyone that's not in the room.
Right.
So you actually aren't able to diagnose people. You are able to say, hey, I see some traits that could resemble blah, blah, blah. Let's read the DSM together and see how you feel about that. Yes. That's not diagnosing somebody.
It's just saying, I don't know, but here are some
information, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody said, is it okay for my therapist child to be in the room with her doing our Zoom? The child's 5 years old.
No.
So it's one thing if the child runs in for a second because the mom didn't realize the door wasn't locked and they got away from the babysitter for one thing. Accidents happen. Absolutely. But nobody should ever, ever be in the room with your therapist.
This one. I had a therapist type on a computer and scroll videos during a session. The video started playing out loud. Oh, my God. We are so sorry.
The amount of people I have had said to me, though, is like, I have a therapist that texts during sessions or reads emails during sessions.
Or picks up the phone.
Yes.
I mean, here's the thing. It's one thing if your therapist is like, this one time, there's a possibility that I have an emergency or like, and that's right. They communicate with you. You have a conversation.
When my dad was in the hospital with COVID, yes. I remember starting out my session by saying, here is my situation. I have a family member in the hospital. There is a chance I could end up. I do have my phone on. If I get called, I do have to go take this. And if that had happened, the phone never rang. It didn't matter. But if it had happened, I wouldn't have charged for that. Like, if something had happened, I had to leave for whatever reason. And we have a clinician at our practice who, got a call during a session that her daughter was having trouble breathing and she had to go meet the daughter at the hospital with the other partner. And so she called me up. She's freaking out. She felt so guilty. And I was like, don't charge the clients. people who survive, like, the only thing that matters is being with your child right now.
Yes.
And it's fine. So, like, the reality is your therapist is people and things can happen, but they shouldn't be texting. They definitely shouldn't be fucking scrolling.
Right. Scrolling and watching videos.
Like, they were on TikTok or, like.
Yeah, that is, or, like, YouTube. Like, what was happening?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm so sorry that you had that experience, though. And that is where I want to reiterate, right? Like, where you could have a bad experience with a therapist, and that might mean that the therapist is not the right fit for you. And there are other therapists out there. It does not mean that therapy does not work, right?
Yeah.
Understandably so, those experiences can be damaging. They can be hurtful. And I think someone wrote in about this, but something I want to normalize is that you can bring those experiences into your next therapist and have a conversation about them, because therapy is a very vulnerable experience to talk to someone about kind of your deepest, darkest things you're going through, and to have that trust be broken down in some way. That can be really hurtful. It can be a wound. And so you can bring that in to the next therapist that you see.
Did you know that billions of plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles end up in landfills every year? I used to contribute to that waste, constantly buying single-use plastic cleaning products without giving it much thought. But then I discovered Blue Land, and it has been a game changer. Blue Land has helped me eliminate the need for single-use plastic and the products I reach for the most. They are reinventing cleaning essentials. Their approach is simple yet revolutionary. Refillable cleaning products with a sleek design that not only looks great on your counter, but also reduces plastic waste significantly. What I love most is the convenience. With Blue Land, I never worry about running out of cleaning supplies or lugging bulky bottles from the store. From hand soap to toilet bowl cleaner to laundry tablets that each smell incredible, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. I was blown away when I received my first Blue Land order. I immediately filled the bottles with water and their tablets, which was so easy to try everything out. And the ingredients are clean, the scents are refreshing, and the packaging is just so cute. Blue Land is trusted in over 1 million homes, including mine. If you're ready to make a positive change for the planet without sacrificing cleanliness or convenience, Blue Land has you covered. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
A really fun fact about me that you might not know is that if I let my hair dry natural, it is a frizzball mess, which is one of the many reasons I absolutely love Prose. I truly never thought that I would be able to embrace my natural hair texture. Ever since I switched to a custom hair routine with Prose, I've noticed so many benefits. Less frizzy hair, yes, but beyond that too. My hair is shinier, healthier, and so much more manageable. Filming the podcast every week makes checking out my hair unavoidable, and I have felt so much more confident on camera thanks to Prose. Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. The custom shampoo and conditioner combo, plus the hydrating leave-in conditioner and hair oil, keeps the frizz at bay. It also makes for the smoothest blowout. People keep asking me if I got my hair cut or went to the salon, which is, of course, the highest compliment. Prose isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're certified B Corp cruelty-free and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. They even have a review and refine tool which learns from my feedback and adjusts my formula to keep up with the seasons and changes in my life. I used this feature when I moved to my temporary house in New Jersey, back to my house post-construction project in Pennsylvania. Environmental factors like water source is something that Prose takes into consideration with their customization. So it was very cool that I had the ability to update my location. Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin, and they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/shrinkchicks. So you get a free consultation, then 50% off at prose.com/shrinkchicks. That's prose.com/shrinkchicks.
So let's go through some of these questions here. How to find when and what does insurance cover? This is a really good one. I want to talk about the basics. If you're looking to go through insurance, you're going to contact your insurance provider directly, and you're going to ask for, one, information regarding your mental health services, and you're going to ask for a list of in network providers. This is going to be much faster than you going on Psychology Today and emailing 15 fucking therapists and saying, do you take my insurance? And the reason that is lots of therapists, one, do not take insurance. And the reason for that is very, very simple, which is the reimbursements for mental health care providers is garbage. And so my fee could be $150, very normal, typical fee for out of pocket. And let's say that I'm paneled on one insurance, they submit it, I could end up getting paid $30 for that. Sometimes you end up paying $75, but people are paneled with things typically based on reimbursement. And so if it's very difficult for you to find a network provider with your insurance, it might be that they just pay less to therapists. So you're going to ask for that list of in-network providers. And then right there, you already have a list of every single person that takes your insurance in your area. That is the quickest way to get your list. It is not Googling. It is not reaching out to different clinicians. It is going to your insurance if that's what you want to do. A few other options you have for payment is you can always request for a sliding scale. You can ask if they have a low fee option. You can ask if they have pre-licensed individuals. You can ask if someone has interns, any of those things. But the best way to find it is finding a therapist. You sort of have to think about what's the most important thing. If budget is the most important thing, because I'm on a tighter budget, I'm going to have to go with the insurance and the budget option first and then start looking for the right fit. If you're in more of a privileged situation where you don't have that, then I think finding the right therapist, one, I love word of mouth. I know that that's not always a comfortable thing, but if you hear somebody raving about their therapist or talking about it, you can always say like, hey, if it's okay with you, like, could you ask your therapist for a name for me? And word of mouth is legit.
Yeah. I feel like people who love their therapist love talking about their therapist, right?
But you might be like, oh, well, I don't want to see their therapist because it's my best friend. But you can say, hey, can your therapist give me a recommendation?
And let me tell you, so the next two questions, how to find one, been with three but haven't clicked with any. How do you know if you found the right one? I personally have been through like 8 different therapists until I found a therapist I like.
Same.
And it can be very disheartening to go to multiple therapists and say like, I don't know if I click with this one. You just know.
Yeah.
You really just know when it feels right for you. So I would say keep trying. Like and once again, I know it can be exhausting. It's almost like dating, right? It's like going on a bunch of first dates where you're like, wow, that felt like a waste of time. But it's so essential that when you find the right fit for you, the ways in which it can transform your journey therapeutically is like beyond anything you're going to experience with someone you don't click with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to feel more trusting. You're going to feel more open. You're going to feel like you can talk about things. They're going to take you to different places. And it also might be the case that like you see someone for, you know, 3-5 years, and then you either outgrow them and you need something different, and that's okay too. And so I just want to normalize the fact that like the looking for a therapist and the experience of that can be draining.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
And that's why at our practice, we try to set someone up. And if they give it a try and they want to try someone else, we set them up with someone else. So we try to make that matching process as seamless as possible. But yeah, it can be exhausting. But yeah. I just want to say how important it is to do that work to find someone who's the right fit, because when you get to the point where they are, it can really be transformative in a lot of ways.
It's kind of a nice thing about going to a group practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's like there's always like a referral.
Yes.
Or they always have like, you know what I mean? Like that, I think that is like a pro, like we're very pro group practice people.
Yes.
And I think that's like a big part of it. But I mean, absolutely. When I was fighting with Millie, I remember going to 5 different therapists.
Yeah.
And going to all of them like 5 times, like really trying.
And I don't know if you had this experience, Em, but like when I was searching for therapists too, I would kind of put it back on myself, like, oh, this must be me. Like, I'm just too picky because I'm a therapist myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no, when you find the right one, you're like, oh, never mind. Like, they just were not the right fit for me. And it doesn't feel, you know how if
you know, you're doing something that doesn't feel like the right fit. It feels like work in a lot of ways. Like now, you know, do I love talking about my emotions? No, but I'm going to do it because I know it's right for me and I feel safe with my therapist and I feel comfortable with my therapist. So it's almost like, you know, working out, right? Fucking hate working out.
I know.
Emily called me the other day after a workout and she was like, how was it? And I was like, you know, I'm never going to say like it was amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, but me, I didn't work out for how many years and now I work out every single day because I love my workout. I love going to the gym. I feel good afterwards, but I also have like friends there and I feel supported.
Right.
And if you had told me that a year ago, I'd be like, you're out of your fucking mind. But because I always thought it was me.
Right. Exactly. You end up putting it on yourself where it's you just have not found the right fit yet.
Yeah.
It's once again, it's like dating. You haven't found the right person yet. You know, it's just it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what else we got? Dealer's choice.
I really like this one. How to break up with a therapist and how to handle not feeling validated by them. So breaking up with a therapist, you're allowed to say like, hey, I've been thinking about it and I think I'm coming to the end of our work together. And like, thanks for this experience. And I'm going to, you know, take a break from our sessions now or I'm going to end. I will say this. If you feel... it would be normal for a therapist to possibly explore why that is. All right, tell me if we've met your goals. Tell me where we're at. That's just like, you know, best practice for us to get some information. But if you have someone who gives you a lot of pushback, well, I've heard this, somebody told me this horrible story once where somebody went to go break up with their therapist and the therapist was like, so then I'm going to lose $150 each week. And if you get anything like that, that's a huge problem and run.
Oh my God.
I know. Is that horrible?
You can't see me unless you're watching YouTube, but like my mouth is wide open. Like that is hard. Right. If you're getting pushback or they're taking it, why wouldn't you want to come see me? Right. Like if you're getting some sort of like personal reaction to that, then there's something else going on. Mm-hmm. It is very normal for it is good practice for your therapist to be like, well, let's talk through this. Like, tell me about the goals you've accomplished. Tell me about what you want to accomplish next.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to see someone else.
Well, and somebody had written in like, how to end it with a therapist. I know she's taking me where I need to go, but I like her.
Yeah.
Like, I really like this person. And you can say that. This is actually really hard to me because I actually really love seeing you and working with you. And I think that I've gone as far as I can go with you.
Mm-hmm.
And most therapists are going to say, I'm really going to miss seeing you each week too. And I'm so glad you feel that way. Because at the end of the day, we're in this weird profession that if we do our jobs well, we lose clients.
Yeah.
That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can be with someone for years and love them and have amazing rapport. And they've taken you so far and you've done such great work. And sometimes we take people as far as we can take them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's time for someone else to come in. And so it's normal to try different therapists. It's good. It's important to have different perspectives.
Yes. And your therapist can care about you, right? And they can love seeing you and still let you go and say, I understand this is, that is important, right? That's a really important thing to have as a therapist.
It's the duality.
It's the duality of, I can care about you and I can care about you so much that I know that you're doing what's best for you. And I've supported you through this and that you've gotten to a place where you can take care of yourself or you're looking for something else. And that's totally fine. It's very healthy for your therapist to have that boundary. And if your therapist moves into, well, I care about you so much that I don't want you to leave, that is more about your therapist.
Yeah.
Right? That is more something to do with your therapist's abandonment issues, right? Rejection issues. And it's not your job to take care of your therapist's feelings around that.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said, how do I maximize sessions? I think that for a lot of people, processing afterwards. So whether that's writing down what you talked about, I have a bunch of clients that at the end of the session, write down some takeaways from the session. Because if you're onto something, then it's sometimes helpful for you to review that. Your therapist should be doing that as well. But a lot of therapists, one of those being me, is I'll open up the session by saying, well, where should we begin today? Because sometimes we talk about something that was really great last week, but then, you know, your dog got hit by a car this week. And obviously that's where you want to fucking start, right? And so typically I'm going to always give someone autonomy to make that decision. But it could be helpful for you to do processing after the session and like keep those thoughts going.
Yeah. And something you can do too is if you keep like a notes app, if there are things that happen between the times that you're having therapy, you know, maybe you have this like revelation or you have some sort of argument with someone, write them down. Write them down in your notes, because by the time you get back to therapy, you may have completely forgotten about it. But something you want to write down in those notes is like, how were you feeling at the time? How did you react to that feeling at the time? What was going on for you? A lot of the work happens outside of the therapy room. And so for you to be very conscious of what's happening outside of the therapy room and to write it down and to be very present with it and then bring it back into therapy, that is how you're going to get the most out of your sessions. Mm-hmm. If you're coming in to therapy every single time, you haven't thought about or done a thing with what you've talked about, it is going to be harder to get the most out of your sessions. If that's what you need, where you just need to go in and you need to vent and you don't need to get any deeper and that's helping you in some way, that's your choice.
Yeah.
But if you want to get the most out of it, if you want to get deeper, to be very present with yourself outside of the therapy room and then to bring that back into therapy, that is where you're going to maximize your sessions. I loved when clients come in and they have said, oh, like I wrote down all of this stuff.
Yeah. I love it.
You know? And so, because it's so helpful. It's so helpful to have direction and understanding. But yeah, that's what I would say is be present outside of the therapy room and then bring that into session.
Somebody asked, why do you think it's so hard to be fully honest in therapy? I guess I would say probably because it really matters to you what people think about you. The other issue with sometimes loving our therapist, and so many people wrote in different stuff of calling their therapist beloved, or my wonderful, my angel therapist. But that also tells me that you really care deeply about them. And one of the things is that then love can sometimes get in the way. If I care for someone so much, sometimes I'm also worried what they're going to think about me. So I don't always want to tell them the parts that I think are the quote unquote ugly parts. And that's what we're here for, is to hear every single part of you. But it is very hard to be honest, because it's really hard to be honest in life.
You can also bring that into the therapy room. Yes. You can say to your therapist, hey, I'm having a hard time being fully honest in here. And I just want to process through that, because the relationship with you that you have with your therapist is also representative of the relationships that you have outside mm-hmm. of the therapy room. Right. So if the reason why it's difficult for you to be honest with your therapist is because you're caring a lot about what they think, so much so that you don't feel like you can be fully yourself, then my guess is that that also happens outside of the room. And so the work that you do with your therapist is also based in the work you do in your relationship with the therapist. So if you can directly say to them, hey, I'm having a hard time fully being myself or expressing myself fully, I want to talk through why that is and what's going on for me, it gives you the opportunity to have conversations with another human being that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise, right? And to really understand yourself in that context. So bring that experience into the room. Have the conversation about that, because that will directly help you transform your relationships outside of the room too.
Yeah. Okay. We gotta choose one more before we end.
Oh, wow. Okay. I like this one. I don't know if this feels like an ending one, but I like it. What's helpful for a therapist to work on in their own therapy?
All of your triggers and little wounds and your core issues and all the lovely things. So something that can be helpful is shit that gets brought up for you from your own clients, reactions that you have, times where you feel yourself pulling towards or pulling away from something, right? Like, I think it's also really helpful to do what might feel beginner's level genogram shit. Like, it might be helpful to go back and like really look at family dynamics. If it feels like you don't have anything to talk about, you're not talking enough.
Yeah.
So if it feels, and like, let me tell you that everyone that we know that's been one of those people that's like, oh, well, I don't really have my own stuff. Okay, we had this amazing interaction that happened our first week of grad school, where the director of our program, who's this like hilarious dude, was like, so what's everyone's like family issues, right? Like, what's tell me about your fucked up family dynamics, basically. And this girl raised her hand. She's like, well, what if we don't have one? Like, what if my family's great? And he's like, I guess you haven't gone to therapy yet. And she hadn't.
It's true. It's true.
And so if you haven't gone there yet, or if you're like, there's nowhere to go, you're not looking.
You're not looking. Also, we had another question. I know I'm jumping back into questions, but it made me think of this. It was, what if you have nothing to talk about in therapy?
Oh, those are the best sessions.
Sometimes those are the best sessions, and I'll tell you why. When clients come in and they feel like they always have something specific to talk about within that last week, sometimes it keeps them away from the vulnerability of going deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why those are the best sessions is because it clears the path to be able to go deep into family history, triggers, what's coming up for you. It allows you to be more vulnerable, and all of the crises of the week are not there to protect you from going deeper.
Yeah.
Those are the best sessions because it allows you to get to the depth and the root of what's going on and can really be eye-opening in a lot of ways. So I would say also, if you're a therapist going to therapy, if you feel like you have nothing to talk about, that's okay. Allow yourself to be vulnerable and allow yourself to go there.
Yeah.
You can only take your clients as deep as you've taken yourself. So remember that when you are in the other chair.
So here's a Dear Em and Jen. Dear Em and Jen, I love your podcast.
Thank you.
Yay. And currently a 26-year-old. I hate myself for that. Currently a 26-year-old. I love your podcast. And I'm currently a 26-year-old burnout elementary special education teacher in New York. I am interested in changing careers and becoming a therapist. People naturally open up to me about their problems and come to me for advice. But I'm trying to figure out if I will just become burnt out in the other profession. What does becoming a therapist entail? How do I get it started? Please help me. Much love, a burnt out teacher. These teachers.
Ugh, we're sending you love.
It is a motherfucking sin. What has happened to teachers in this goddamn country? I love every teacher, and y'all don't get paid fucking enough. You should get paid $1 million a year.
$1 million.
This, of course, you're burnt out. This shit's insane. So let me tell you something. Possible you could come burnt out in any profession. I think that that's a risk absolutely anywhere you go, because we live in late stage capitalism and we love productivity and overworking ourselves. So you would have to be very, very aware about that. How do I actually have work-life balance? How do I actually take care of myself? How do I have enough self-care and community care? All these things. But if you want to become a therapist, what it might look like is checking out some different grad school programs. I would imagine that you probably, if you're elementary special education, you might have to do a few prereqs like statistics or abnormal psych and stuff like that, which you could do through a community college. So I would start with is looking at graduate school programs and see what prereqs they would need before you start applying. But it's very easy for you to apply, then do some type of online or community college program to get those prereqs done. It's typically, if you do full time, it's typically 1.5 to 2 years. For part time, it can go around 3 years, depending on how much you're working or if you're working during that time. And then also what type of internship you end up with if you get your hours quickly enough. So to get started, first of all, I would figure out, if I was to do this, what population would I want to work with? And the population you want to work with, it might change which degree you end up getting. Jen and I knew that we wanted to work with couples, so being MFTs made the most sense for us. If you're wanting to work with families, being an MFT is going to make the most sense. If you want to work in an agency school program, you might want to start out in social work. A lot of people with addictions do LPC. So I think you would start to say, like, what is the population I'd be interested in working with? Because there is all of these different degrees and what you want to do with them. But also sometimes it's, what program can I get into? What can I afford? And what you have to remember is you're going to do a bunch of work in grad school, but you're going to be learning the rest of your life. So even if you end up in a more of a general grad school program, you can always take continuing educations and certifications and post-grads and all that stuff afterwards. get there, learn the basics, and then you can sort of dwindle down from there about what you're really looking for.
Here's what I would say in terms of the burnout piece of it. The thing that you know, it took me to is like how the question I would ask yourself is like, how do you feel when people are opening up to you about their problems? You know, something you experience as a therapist, and we talk about being a therapist as almost like a calling, right? Where when we talk to people who aren't therapists, we tell them what we do. They're like, I could never do that. And like, I feel that way about a ton of professions, right? Like I could never do a lot of things. But I knew that when people would open up to me about their problems, like there was something about it that like felt so fulfilling. And yeah. you know, Emily and I have talked about this over the years, that there are times in which we have maybe been struggling with our own stuff or like been really stressed. And we will go into a session and come out of a session and you're like a new person, because the level of fulfillment that you get from like having that connection with someone and being there for someone and, you know, hearing what they're going through and seeing their resilience, there is something that's unbelievably fulfilling about it. And not everyone feels that way, right? There are some people who really get that, and then there are some people who don't. So that's a question if you're deciding, like, am I going to become burnout? Yes, there's absolutely a risk. But I would ask you to ask yourself, like, does it feel in a way like a calling for you when people do come to you? Does it feel good to give them advice? Does it feel good to help them? Does it feel good to help people in general? Do you, you know, analyze yourself a lot? Are you analyzing other people? Like, I think sometimes our brains work in certain ways, and when we're in the right place and it feels like it fits, it doesn't feel as much like work than doing something that doesn't feel like the right fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't want to say that corny saying of like, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. But like,
we still work all the time. What are you talking about?
That's why I say I didn't want to say it. But also, we're doing a million things. We're not just, you know.
But something you just said actually really spoke to me, is you say this idea, like, right? Like, if I think about like being an astronaut, I'm like, I know I could never do that. That sounds right. Like some shit I would never want to do. But if I think about seeing clients, I know I could never not do that.
Right.
Like, that is what I know I, in whatever way, in whatever capacity, whatever that looks like, helping other people, I can never not do.
Absolutely. And listen, not everyone gets that opportunity to, in their career, be doing something that is like completely fulfilling their soul.
Yeah.
And that's okay, right? You can find other things that completely fulfill your soul. But,
and not every part will. I mean, like, doing paperwork, sure as shit doesn't fulfill your soul.
Oh, right. Of course.
Writing invoices. I'm like, I love this shit. No.
But there are pieces of it, of course, that will not feel fulfilling. But that's what I would say is like, listen to the things that really give to you and look for the career that you can meld those two together. I think that that's essential. And I just have felt so lucky to be able to have that myself. And I know a lot of therapists feel that way.
All right. That's today's episode. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you liked it, always send it on over to a friend. We always ask you to rate, review, subscribe, follow us on Apple Podcasts. You can check us out on YouTube at Shrink Chicks, on Instagram at Shrink Chicks, or the therapy group. We would love to help you find the right therapist for you. You can go to thetherapygroup.com, fill out a contact form. We would love to match you. Jen and I match you ourselves.
What we do.
Thank you so much for listening. It is always an honor to spend the space with you. You can check out our merch at shrinkchicks.com. You can check out our journal if you write in Shrink Chicks Journal into Amazon. It's always an honor to be a small, small part of your life. We will see you next week at Shrink Chicks. And don't forget that to grow yourself, you got to know yourself. We'll talk soon.